Welcome to the Aging Well Together show. We have such a great show planned for today that I'm excited to finally get it started. We have Holly Ann Lux Sullivan here. She is the founder of Heartwood Death Doula and Bereavement Care. We're going to talk all about what a death doula is and does. This has been a really powerful field and profession I've known for a little while, but we haven't had an official death doula, I don't think, here on the show. So I'm so excited for all we will learn together. But before we dive into our show, as always, I want to give a shout out to WCOM LP Chapel Hill Carrboro, and especially today and every day, but especially Grateful Dave and Jacques Minoche, who came in and were our knights in shining hero to clean up the mess that I created when I went to clean up a mess. So thank you so much, WCOM LP Chapel Hill Carrboro, for hosting our weekly Aging Well Together show. You can catch our show every Thursday from 2 to 3 on 103.5 FM or stream us live through WCOMFM.org. The Aging Well Together show is brought to you by the always helpful team at the Orange County Department on Aging. They are our wonderful sponsors. They are expert guests on the show, which you heard for a few moments before I interrupted it. Each week, the team posts our previous shows on Orange County's website, so you can catch up on any of our past shows, or you can also find a range of local Orange County aging resources by going to Orange County Department on Aging's website, which is www.orangecountync.gov/aging. I was busy talking with someone yesterday and they needed to go to the website, and I felt like I was back on the air. OrangeCountyNC.gov/aging. And if you have questions about local resources, you can go old school and just pick up the phone and call the Orange County Department on Aging at 919-968-2070. And if you have questions about our shows or want to suggest a topic, person, or organization, Alicia just handed me some cards of people she was chatting with. So we're busy booking for the 2026 season. I can't believe it. And speaking of Alicia, you can put the microphone in front of you.
Hey, honey. Heather.
I was so sad that Alicia wasn't going to be with us today, because Alicia, besides being one of the fabulous wellness instructors for the Department on Aging, she's one of the just truly amazing and motivated and engaged community volunteers. And she's always doing civic things. She had to miss last week's show because she's a poll worker. She saves democracy.
Amen.
By working the polls. And I assumed she wasn't coming in today, and so we didn't text, and all of a sudden she walked in, and I was like, so are people are voting today, they're just not voting with your help.
Right.
Well, help sounds right.
Hopefully people are voting today.
I saw people voting as I was walking.
Good.
Get out the vote. All right. Well, Alicia, thank you for all you
Thanks,
do. Folks, you did not hear our opening music, but you will hear our closing music by the Robert Bradford Quintet, and thank them, our local Carrboro bass band, for letting us use their original music. All right. Let's just blow through me. I'm Heather Altman. I am your interesting host. I've spent almost 30 years working in aging services and supports. I help older adults and their families connect with resources in our community. I'm a caregiver for older family members, and at 55, I am totally invested in my own aging wellness. All right. I'm trying to rush through it because we need to get to Holly. I am so excited. My new friend, Holly Ann Lux Sullivan, she said I can call her just Holly, but I wanted to do her fullness of her name. She is the founder of Heartwood Death Doula and Bereavement Care. Holly, I love your tagline, even though it's not really a tagline, but it just says serving Central North Carolina at the bedside and everywhere else online.
Yes.
I like the wording of it. Anyway, welcome, Holly.
Welcome.
Thank you both so much for having me. I'm so glad to be here today.
So glad. And I know we have listeners. I told folks we were going to be talking to a real life death doula.
Yes.
I think we did a shout out last week on the show. I was on State of the Station with Jacques last week, and I said, for example, we're going to have a death doula. And then he started to ask me questions. I'm like, no, listen into the show. I can't steal Holly's
what
thunder.
What number is this show?
Oh my gosh, I'm so glad you asked. It is show 93. Okay, we're getting there. We're getting there. I'm planning our 100th. All right, Holly, welcome. And welcome. We are going to just ask so many questions about what a death doula is and what it does. But first, tell us about you. Where are you from, your background, and how you got involved in end-of-life journeys?
Sure. So I am a North Carolinian as of the last 25 years. I grew up in Ohio, have been here for about 25 years this year. And my background and training is as an interfaith chaplain, primarily in first hospital settings, and then for about 11 years in hospice care. So in hospital settings, a chaplain is at the bedside in emergencies. And I often would say to my hospice families that they are just having a slow motion emergency.
Yes.
Because a loved one facing the end of life or facing the end of your own life is an emergency. It's just a little bit slower sometimes. And I came to this work honestly because I knew that I wanted to serve people on the margins of our society. And in my chaplain work, I learned how isolated people become, often just with any debility that might come with age or chronic illness. People can get very isolated. And so I knew when I was in seminary that I wanted to go to the people rather than being, I'm a Unitarian Universalist, so rather than being a congregational minister where people come to me, I wanted to go to them.
Oh, that is so... I knew a few things, but I was like, Holly, I'm not going to ask too much because I want to ask it on the air and hear it. Because I was curious about the link from your chaplaincy work into the work you're doing now, but you're already starting to share those themes. I love that, going to the people and going to especially folks that are on the margins, as you say, who don't have the ability necessarily to come to you.
Right.
So I'm debating which question to ask first. What is a death doula and how did you decide to come to it? Maybe tell the story. How did you find out about what a death doula is? And I think through that, we'll get the answer of what is a death doula?
Absolutely. So as a hospice chaplain, it probably in the last 5, maybe 6 years, I started kind of hearing this phrase, death doula or end of life doula. And honestly, I was just curious because as I would read about what a death doula does, providing emotional and spiritual support, care, and education for people who are facing the end of life, I thought, well, that's what I do as a hospice chaplain. What is different, honestly? And I decided that I wanted to take a doula certification course because I understood sort of the very basic tenets of what a death doula did, but I thought, okay, what am I missing? So I took a training and certification course, and honestly, the biggest difference between what I do now as a death doula versus when I was working at a hospice agency is that I am able to be more fully myself. And because I have a website where people can read a lot about me, if they don't want somebody whose faith is Unitarian Universalism, they're not going to call me, right? And so it just allows me to be more fully myself, which I firmly believe lets people be more fully themselves with me.
Sure. And I've been really fascinated. I think I first heard the term maybe 2-3 years ago. And it's been a while since I've had my babies. It's been over 20 years.
Wow.
But that's when I first heard the term, and I heard birth doulas.
Right.
How do you, I'm assuming that care, support, and education, but like which came first? And how does birth doula and death doula, and do you do both? How does that work?
I definitely don't do both. You do not want me when you are having a baby. I can assure you of that.
Well, I want support, care, and education, but I guess
absolutely,
the support and care, but yeah.
It is much more, well, I will say this. I think humankind has been caring for each other at these watershed moments of our lives for as long as there have been people, right?
Oh, okay, yeah.
And yes, birth doulas are people that many more people are familiar with than death doulas.
Right.
But if you have been at the bedside of somebody who is dying, you know that the dying process is work. It is labor. And we have long acknowledged and recognized that carrying and delivering a child is labor. Mm-hmm. And I think we are beginning to recognize, thanks in part to the work of RN Barbara Carnes, who I kind of refer to as America's hospice nurse, because she's an American hospice pioneer. Mm-hmm.
And you said RN. We do an acronym thing, registered nurse.
Okay, registered nurse, mm-hmm. Yep. And she is the one, in fact, who said that I first heard that dying is work too. And so just as a birth doula supports somebody about to deliver a baby and throughout that process, a death doula supports people as they are on that journey. So mm-hmm. sometimes that may mean working with somebody who is not in hospice care, not eligible, or doesn't mm-hmm. want hospice care yet, but they want additional support.
Mm-hmm. So one more basic question, then I want to dive into that, how you're working with folks. Doula itself, that term, mm-hmm. I think when I was mentioning it the other day, someone told me what it means, but you tell us in case I say, I have a
sure.
track record of saying the wrong things on air, so I'm going to stop.
Well, my very cursory understanding is that the Latin word doula means woman who serves.
Mm.
So think of it as alumna and alumnus, right?
Oh.
So that being said, I have yet to meet a male death doula.
I was just about to ask,
right.
Is that a doulie?
It would be a doulas.
Doulas. That's where I didn't take Latin.
Yeah, me either, but again, rudimentary understanding.
Oh, great. Okay, so it's someone, a woman who serves. Yeah, I wasn't sure if it was like guide or those kinds of mm-hmm. terms.
It's broader than that, but guidance is absolutely one of the things that we do for sure.
All right, so then you decided to become a death doula yourself, mm-hmm. and I see the links. Are you?
Yeah.
This is an interesting question. Are you still a chaplain? I mean, does one ever stop being a chaplain? I mean,
it's one of those things that honestly, soon after, maybe a few months after I had left my position as a hospice chaplain, a chaplain friend of mine said something about me as a chaplain in the past tense, mm-hmm. and I. What are you talking
Holly
about?
Oh, Holly was a chaplain. You're like, was.
Yeah. And it's something, it is an identity that I have taken on within me because I have carried it for 17 years now.
Sure.
And so I still think of myself as a chaplain, but I also find that people are, who are not typically religious, not, for instance, a member of one of the Abrahamic faiths, for instance, mm-hmm. are much more open to the possibility of a death doula with spiritual or religious training as their background supporting them than if I were saying, I will be your chaplain through
sure.
the end of your life. Because people have more baggage around mm-hmm. the word chaplain. Mm-hmm. People mm-hmm. just don't know the word doula.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get that. And it kind of connects back to their own sense and narrative and identity.
Yes.
So in terms of talking about when people find you, and one more sort of basics question, when people come to you, how do you define it as different than hospice care or mm-hmm. other end-of-life professionals?
Sure.
Because I look at it, I don't want to be whatever, but as a team sport a bit. I mean,
absolutely.
There is a whole team around and supporting us,
yes.
Even though it was during the pandemic when my mom passed away, when I think about others that are transitioning and going through their end-of-life journey, it can be solitary, but it's not. There's a village oftentimes.
It needs to be a team sport.
So
yes.
How do you work with or differ from other professionals, like
sure.
doctors, nurses?
Sure. And the first thing I always make sure people hear is that a doula is in no way a substitution mm-hmm. for hospice care. We are an addition.
And a value add.
Yes, yes. And so hospice care, the primary significance is that you have a hospice team. You have mm-hmm. the nurse who visits. You have a social worker, a home health aide, a chaplain or spiritual counselor if you want it, a volunteer if you want it. And their visit times are fairly limited in terms of, if I wanted to visit with a patient for an hour, I could do that. But anything beyond that, was really pushing it. So as an independent doula, you know, I've been with clients for 3 hours or 6 hours, just whatever they need.
Sure.
Because we often find that questions come up throughout the day through as you're trying to figure everything out that you're going through. And so I'm able to just sit with people and be with them and talk with them and answer questions as they arise, but they don't have to try to think of it all within a short period of time.
Sure. And when you're starting to work with people, how, I would think a lot of people would assume a death doula comes in just at the very last days of life.
Right.
Can you talk about how you work, how your work often begins much earlier, mm-hmm. even at the time of a serious diagnosis? I guess we're still in the basics, but how do you work and how do people connect with you? And,
sure.
and what time, I don't want to overuse the word journey so it becomes cliche,
right.
but in the process.
In the path,
Yeah.
And you're right. My feeling, and this was true when I was in hospice care, and it's even perhaps more true now, is that the sooner someone can engage a death doula, if I have one client who isn't in hospice care, she's not ready for hospice care emotionally, but mm-hmm. she's dealing with a severe diagnosis. She recognizes that. She recognizes that hospice may be in her relatively near future,
mm-hmm.
but she recognized too that she needed support now.
Mm-hmm.
And so she found me, and I'm helping her kind of work through some of the emotional and spiritual concerns that she has as she's dealing with this life event I want to live to see and enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
And there will probably be another. And so helping her begin to think about what quality of life is important to me personally for mm-hmm. her versus is more treatment going to give me longer life, but at a quality I'm not interested in.
Mm-hmm.
And so far, she's feeling good about the course of treatment and about the quality of life she has right now. And so I am just a little bit of a crisis counselor in terms of if something major happens with her treatment, she can text me and say, this crazy thing just happened. And a lot of it is just affirming, that is crazy. That sounds mm-hmm. really scary.
Mm-hmm.
And we just don't have enough kind of institutional supports necessarily.
That's what I was starting to think through about the others that could get involved. And right before we came on the air, about a half an hour before, I was busy emailing with some palliative care doctors. Mm-hmm. And so, and palliative care, and we're going to do a whole show on palliative care, which comes before
yes.
hospice. It is, and I don't want to mess that up, but I would see the connection that you were just saying about helping people think through and make sense of their options and the emotions mm-hmm. and the support that goes around with them, that that's really part of a palliative care, as well as a general therapy. Like they're, mm-hmm. you use the word counselor, and mm-hmm. I know therapy, we have to be careful with
right.
that term, who's a therapist. But I would just, like, to me, this is just a range of tools and resources where someone can say, well, who's going to be the right person to support me? And
yes.
what is there going to be their approach or their affiliation, right? Because I was wondering if therapists ever come, like, do you do training and education of other professionals? Because some of the mm-hmm. work, I would think if someone has an ongoing therapeutic relationship with someone, mm-hmm. they could infuse those questions.
Absolutely. And I am somebody who will always say, do not substitute me for your therapist. One, you mm-hmm. have an established relationship. They know everything about your history. And two, I am here for a very specific reason. And therapists do have training that I don't. And so, and I have training that they don't
mm-hmm.
and experience at the bedside and with serious illness. So if the kind of hang up for me when I was beginning work as a doula is the access question.
Mm-hmm.
Because doulas are not covered by any insurance, Medicare, Medicaid.
Yeah, it's a private pay.
It is a private pay mm-hmm. situation. And that, as somebody who believes firmly in equity and access for all, that was really a struggle for me. And I am able to work with folks If they need to have a sliding scale situation, we can do that. I can take on one or two pro bono people once in a while because I'm able, that allows me to kind of assuage my concerns about access.
Sure, I hear that. And do you find that folks who, are not Unitarian, are you ecumenical? Is it that that is your chaplaincy training, but I mean, in the little bit I've spent with you, I come from a Jewish background. I'd be like, I want Holly by my side. I could see you helping anyone. So assuming you're not limited to...
Not at all. But I, having done my hospice chaplaincy work primarily in Alamance County, which is a much more conservative Christian county than, mm-hmm. say, Orange, then I found that many folks were just not familiar with Unitarian Universalism. So when they would ask me my denomination, first, there was the assumption that it was a Christian denomination.
Sure.
And secondly, saying Unitarian Universalist, it's a mouthful.
It is.
And people just weren't familiar with it. And so now I am able, so I have always been an ecumenical interfaith or mm-hmm. no faith.
I was going to say, and can you speak yes. to folks that may have a more spiritual bend or
Absolutely.
Really want a non-theistic
yes.
just focus regardless? Okay.
Yes. My approach is always and has always been, I am meeting you as the, mm-hmm. the person going through it where you are. Your beliefs are what is important to me. If that's I don't believe in any kind of higher power, and my higher power is this amazing animal I have by my side 24/7.
Mm-hmm.
I am
it.
On board with that, you know?
Well, one of the things, so I'll ask one more question, then Alicia. Well,
no,
I'm going to ask
a lot more
questions, but Alicia, feel free to jump in. But
I want to be a doula.
I could see you being a doula.
I want to be a, we're going to talk.
Okay.
I could really see that for you.
But,
I'd love that for you. One of the things you had said to me beforehand, and then you referenced it in that conversation with one of your work clients, is that you've said before that your work isn't just about death,
mm-hmm.
but it's also about living.
Yes.
And helping people, as you were just referencing, make decisions, weigh treatment options, and have those hard conversations with loved ones.
Yes.
And I'm wondering if you can share examples of what any of that might look like,
sure.
though I realize those were three different things there, but
sure.
just to have people get a sense of what does it look like to work with you and to work through these issues.
Mm-hmm. And I will say you asked earlier about doing trainings for other professionals.
Oh, I did.
And
thank
I'll
you.
Say
totally
that
forgot I asked that.
It was earlier this month or last month, I forget. I did a session at Triad Cremations. They do in Greensboro, they do a grief professionals breakfast quarterly. And they asked me to speak about having the talk. And when we are in our 50s or 60s, and caring for an elder relative, or if we are the elder relative and our kids don't want to talk about end-of-life issues,
mm-hmm.
then the talk is no longer about sex like it was when we were teenagers,
right.
or
mm-hmm.
parents of teenagers. The talk is about end-of-life stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so helping people understand how to come together to have those conversations and that it isn't a one-and-done,
mm.
right? That ideally, and again, ideally is often not what we deal with, but ideally...
Dealing with the reality
yes.
as opposed to ideal. But it's good to have a sense of what people...
Right, right. Ideally, it is multiple conversations over several months' time, let's say.
Or years if you're my friend or family member
yes.
and I am constantly bringing things up.
Yes.
Come on.
You're the one like me.
I'm the worst cocktail party guest ever.
You
All right, go
both.
On. Oh, actually, you are probably too.
Let's talk about that.
Yes. The best. What are your plans?
Right.
What
right.
do you think about this?
And what I encourage folks to do is, what is going to make this period of your life, when you may be dealing with a serious illness that is limiting your time on this earth, what can make this period of time best for you?
Mm-hmm.
I don't have those answers. I know what those answers are for me,
mm-hmm.
but I can't tell either one of you two wonderful
mm-hmm.
women what those answers are.
Mm-hmm.
But I know how to ask the questions and invite those conversations
mm-hmm.
to help you first think about it if you haven't already, and then talk to your people about
mm-hmm.
it. And when family or friends are a little bit hesitant to have those conversations, often it is very helpful to have a non-invested or not nearly invested sure. as the friends and family are person to help facilitate those.
Yeah, it's a different emotional connection.
Exactly.
And so you're objective and connected. It did make me wonder about your work. How much is with the individual mm-hmm. only, or does it involve, like, as you said, do you navigate and help mediate those conversations with family members? Again, whatever the person wants? Like, hey, can
yes.
you, my children don't want to talk about this, or my spouse is in denial, or, you know, how do I share it? So,
And it is all of those things. It is very much the person who is my client is steering the ship, and I'm going to take my clues from them as to, they may just want some tools for how to talk to their loved ones, whether that's their spouse or partner or mm-hmm. children. Or they may want me to help kind of mediate those conversations, in which case it's a simple introduce me to the kids first.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want my first interaction with them to be, let's talk about your most favorite parent on the planet dying.
Yeah.
You know? So it's, when possible, having some sort of introduction and at least a little bit of a relationship to begin with. And then easing our way into the conversations.
Mm-hmm. What about with other providers? Do people, if they say, hey, would you come with me to my doctor's appointment?
Mm-hmm.
So as I think about treatment options, mm-hmm. and you're with them. You're
absolutely.
On the journey.
Yes. If they want me to be, I
you're
am
a woman
there.
Who serves, right?
Yes,
isn't that, is it that woman is who serves, woman who supports?
Woman who serves.
A woman
you
who serves.
It. You got it.
I like that too.
And in terms of doctor's appointments and all of that, I don't care if it's me or somebody else. We all need a second set of ears.
Yes.
You know, especially if we are getting news that nobody wants to hear, we need somebody else to help catch some of the information that's going to start flying at us.
I was talking to someone yesterday about how I'm going to be going with someone to an important appointment, and they reminded me, now remember, bring a notebook. Bring
yes.
a notebook and a pen, because you're
yes.
going to write things down. You're not going to hear things. You're not going to remember it afterwards. Mm-hmm. And
absolutely.
I was like, yeah, I know I knew that. But you also need someone to tell you that and be like, yeah, thank you. Thank
exactly.
you so much. So connecting back to your work now, and I think it links into your chaplaincy work. You've also talked about this work as sacred.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess what makes it sacred for you, and how do you help bring peace and calm into what can be such a painful and emotional time for folks?
Firstly, it is always me making sure that I'm going into a situation in as grounded and centered a place as humanly possible. Mm-hmm. Because if I go into a conversation with a client and family, and my shoulders are up around my ears, and my mm-hmm. heart's pounding because I've been running from the last mm-hmm. appointment, you know.
This is, you know, right, Alicia, I know you can do it. Mm-hmm. I've thought about it myself mm-hmm. a little bit, and I thought, oh gosh, here's me with like way too much Heather energy and suck a bunch of caffeine and be like, okay, let's create some peace and calm, right? What, how's everybody feeling mm-hmm. today? Like, mm-hmm. no. That I don't think I'm the right vibe yet.
I don't know. My hyperness might take me out of this field.
Alicia, we'd be really fun, though. We should. Holly, if you have anyone that needs, like, a bunch of energy,
yes.
bring me and Alicia in, and we'll be
there.
Like, what's
guess
going
what?
On?
Yeah, you know, that's what, you know.
Yeah, we're here. What brings you joy? It brings us joy. Hey, let's tell you stories about this. We'd have so much fun then.
I love that. And people need that, right?
Yes.
And that's one of the things I
have been brought
doing.
In for comic relief, not stand-up, but I have been brought in during heavy situations, and they're like, can you just come and be around and
yeah.
be
yes.
friendly? And in situations where I was not as close to the person, or it was a mm-hmm. family member, a friend's family member, someone, so I could sort of add the,
yes.
not inappropriate levity, but just someone who's not
joyful.
Distraught,
some
you
joy
know, like,
in the room.
Yes, and you need the ability to sense when we need to take a break, when things have been real heavy,
right. mm.
and you need to say, okay, everybody, I think we should all get up, take a drink, walk it off, go to the restroom, tell me a funny story that happened
yeah.
yesterday or 3 weeks ago, or you know. And so part of what I do is giving permission that in a difficult time, mm-hmm. you can still have fun and have joy and take take delight in the fact that you are together with the people you love.
My sisters and I, it's going to weird sound, inappropriate comment or whatever, we had a blast in the ICU. Like, it was awful and traumatic, but then we were like cracking jokes. We were bringing food in. The cemetery for my mom, we were just like, you know, we bring humor and laughter in, and it's our it's our calming place and defense mechanism or whatever. But I would think
good it's because needed. You need it.
Yes.
I think it's meeting people where they are, and it goes back to that words, those words, peace and calm, and how you're able to help people navigate that.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes peace and calm looks like crapping up. Woo,
that's
goodness,
right.
I'm struggling with
Say
words.
Say whatever you want.
Cracking up because the person in the hospital bed had the biggest blowout of their brief that anyone's ever seen. You know, it's when you're dealing with the nitty gritty down and dirty of a sick person, sometimes you've got to just laugh.
Somebody's
got to
crack because it's life.
And it is.
Somebody in the room, that would be me, saying, hey, it's life. This is what it happens when you live.
Yes.
You die.
Yes.
You know, it's one of the things that was interesting. I was looking at one of my questions, and it said, oh, how do you bring joy in and help families see joy in the midst of grief? And I think we were just sort of talking about that. One of the, and then my mind quickly, I can just go up and down so quickly. And my mind just went to trauma and having, there are experiences where someone's lived a long life and they're going through either an expected or unexpected, but it's still a journey as opposed to a traumatic, either a very fast moving illness or have you been called in? I know you did when you were a hospital chaplain, when just like a really awful thing happened. Sure. Not that, whatever.
Emergencies.
Yeah. And car accidents and, violence and unexpected. Right. So you clearly know where I'm going with this. Mm-hmm. So how do you approach different kinds of end of life journeys? Because that's not an end of life journey. Sometimes it's just
scheduled.
Right. It is just something horrible happened. They went to the emergency department, and the emergency department or the rest of the hospital wasn't able to save them. And in a case like that,
bereavement work. Yeah.
That is that bereavement work. Absolutely. And part of that is recognizing and holding that a loss like that, just as any loss, but particularly a sudden loss, can be traumatic because it comes out of the clear blue sky. There are many horrible things about long illnesses, and I never say one is better than the other because grief is grief and it sucks no matter what.
Yeah.
But long illnesses give us the gift of time and time to have conversations and work things out. Sudden loss doesn't do that. Mm-hmm. And so the grieving left behind are struggling with not only what could I have done differently that would have kept her from being on the road that day or kept him from picking up the needle again or whatever the case may be, and just the shock of it all. And so that's where I have to lean on my training and education to know where my lane is, and when somebody is dealing more with trauma than with the grief, that's where I say, let me refer you to an amazing trauma therapist.
Because there's a difference.
Got it.
Yes.
A different approach. And I'm going through in my head, I don't always or often have the right thing to say, but I do have a list of what you're not supposed to say.
Right.
And can we, as a public service announcement, can we do that for a moment? Make the list of what you are not supposed to say. Sure. If they say it to you first, it is fine. But, and I'll tell you the few things I know. At least. You should never say that term, at least. Well, at least you had 50 good years. Now, if they say it,
Right.
When, if they're, you know, at least we had 50 good years together, or at least I had this, or at least I had noticed. If they say it, but I was told to never, like, well, at least.
Don't introduce that.
Don't introduce that. And then even things that we think, oh, they're in a better place.
Oh,
do not get me started on this one.
That one, I don't know either.
No, I'm going to get you started. We're on air. Get started on it. I'd like, this is how I'm bringing joy by just, like, let's laugh about it now. But
let's get Holly worked up, and this will bring you joy. That delights me.
If the person says that.
Yes.
I've had people say at least they are in a better place, or they are with the Lord now, right, or they are with this family member.
Yes.
If that gives them peace and calm,
that is one.
Amen.
Yes.
But you don't say it for, because I've heard grieving people say, what the?
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And the best.
But get started. What are some of the things about the better place? I'd like to, because your look on your face made me think, I'd like to go there with you.
Things I will not say on the radio for 500, please, Alex.
I got that.
All right, I hear you.
The example I will give you is several years ago, a former colleague from the News and Record in my previous life. I was a journalist.
Oh, she did not share that in the beginning. Okay, go on.
Scoop that out.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's important.
Mark, I did not Binker, stalk enough. Okay.
Mm-hmm. He died of a heart attack very suddenly. He was 43.
Oh.
Right? And he had two teenage sons at the time. This was maybe 10 years ago. I don't remember for sure how long it's been. But at that, at his funeral, which he had gone from print journalism to broadcast, went to the dark side, as we like to say. And so his funeral was packed full of all of these colleagues and friends from, you know, 20 years. And one of his teenage sons got up and spoke about his father, which, first of all, unbelievable that he could manage to do it. But second of all, that teenager stood there and told a room full of adults, so many people have said to me that he's in a better place, but that's not true.
Oh, he said that?
Good for him.
The place he would want to be is here with me and my brother and my mom.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to rise up clapping and cheering for this kid. It was the bravest, most amazing thing.
Good,
that
was good.
And it's true.
It's true.
It's true. And it's, again, if the person grieving says that. But the other things that annoyed my friend after her husband died tragically and suddenly in a car accident, she said, and she has since passed away, actually. That's an awful situation. And she... young people too, like in their, both of them in their 30s and 40s, just crazy. And she said, what is that, like, God puts out flowers and they like to, and they like to keep some of their flowers for themselves. Holly's shaking her head, listeners. Again, if this has given you joy, and I don't want to demean it, but it's more people say.
And the problem is.
And I've said, I'm not.
I've done it too, years ago. Absolutely. We all say things that we wish we hadn't, but too often people say things, you know, one of my earliest memories as a hospital chaplain when I was still in training, a young man, 40, 42, dropped dead of a heart attack, two small kids, and I was at the bedside. He was deceased. His wife and children, no, the children weren't there, but his wife was, and her mother came in, and her mom was comforting her own daughter by saying, God needed another angel.
That's it. It was that it. It was the
first of all, that's just bad theology. Angels are not dead people.
Thank you.
Oh.
I believe that.
Okay, can we have another show on that? That messes up a lot of movie. There's a new movie coming out. Go on.
You're right.
Angels are a whole class of celestial being. That's are not dead people. That's
okay, did not know that. Go on, but
bad
yes.
Bad theology aside, I don't, if I'm the bereaved wife.
Wait, what was the term again? Say it again so I can write it. The God wanted his own angel.
God needed another angel.
God needed another. That's it.
Yeah.
Like he's low.
Thank you. First of all, no, he doesn't. Second of all.
Or she. Yeah.
He or she. No,
I know, sorry. Amen. Just have fun.
If I am literally the weeping woman over my dead husband's body.
I don't need to hear that.
No, ma'am. No.
And for funsies and for fairness,
don't know what
let's
to say.
Flip this, though, just out of fairness, in case anyone's listening. When another friend's husband passed away, and she is has very, very strong Christian faith, yes, and came to me and said things that are not things that I believe, or not mm-hmm. things that I, you know, at least he's, you know, in a better place, or sure. With Jesus now. And that's where I just, I'm so, yes, I'm not yes, there. I'm so happy for you. Like, I didn't, absolutely. I didn't say happy for you. I did promise I didn't say happy for you. I'm like, yes. But I just agreed. I didn't be like, no, you know, I don't no, believe absolutely. In that. I mean, and so it's not the time
right. it's
to
not.
Say,
have
well.
Have a debate about it and then mm-mm. determine that he, that's not true.
And if someone said, God needed another angel, and it was their own loved one. It's not the time to say, hey, did you exactly. know the angels are another
absolutely
celestial
not.
Being? Yeah,
right.
I know. Like, would.
Right.
So
no.
again, this is where we're having right. some humor with it. We're right. just trying to bring levity
and
into
recognizing
like,
that if the person who is most mm-hmm. aggrieved is the one saying it, then that is
let
helping them
it.
Through and
let
hallelujah for
that's
it.
Right. Yes.
Where it does get complicated, I would think, I'm going through my own Rolodex of mm-hmm. memories and situations either I've seen, experienced, or read about in, you know, a kind of a newspaper kind of article sure. of these ethicists or things like that. When there are siblings, mm-hmm. when there are people for whom mm. they are grieving differently
right. yes.
for a parent or a friend.
Yeah.
And so people go through their own grief process.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw something on Instagram just the other day, a husband and wife were kind of did a video about how they were grieving differently for the loss of their children. And
yes.
so then we're, I don't know, I just kind of just
I
think
know.
Kindness and
whatever. I remember,
you help people navigate that.
I remember in a room and somebody had died. And we were all, you know, and it was her mother and I was part of it. But after it, they told me, they said, she did not even show any kind of emotion. Mm. How dare her sit there and look like that? And I thought,
ooh, do not judge people.
You can't, mm-mm. you don't know how people are dealing with that.
Exactly.
And I thought that to be really,
or I would
I'll
say,
never forget that.
And how much medication some of us may have taken
right.
to get through the experience.
Right. Yes.
Like,
to sit there.
Gosh.
I do believe since COVID, though, we've changed in that area
mm-hmm.
as far as funerals and wakes and how people sit around looking at death room. I think a person in a casket, mm-hmm. you know, it's just for the new generation. They're not doing it, I don't think.
Mm. Well, that brings up an interesting point when you brought up the pandemic, and it made me think back to what I said right in the beginning about I love Holly's tagline can help you on the at the,
at
bed
the bedside
or any
virtual anywhere
right.
else yeah
or yeah I yeah I
and
love
during the pandemic I
yes and everywhere else
happened.
Online and mm-hmm. so maybe that's
it
a good
desensitized a lot of death
see interestingly I might either might not be understanding exactly the point you're making or I might be about to push back on it.
Ooh. Well, when I say desensitized a death it used to be so you know, death, you know, everybody's getting in a room. Now, people don't want to get in a room anymore. They could do it virtual.
Mm-hmm.
They could, they don't have to sign the book anymore. Younger people.
Oh, that they can experience.
They don't have to have the experience of sitting in the room with the coffin.
Sure, sure.
Know? They don't have to do that anymore.
I see what you're saying.
And I think it's interesting. I was in a webinar once just as a participant listening to the speakers, and it happened to be two young women, millennial age,
mm-hmm.
and they were talking about final arrangements and end-of-life stuff. And I said to them, because my impression is that I'm Gen X very firmly,
oh.
and the
me too.
No, not me. I'm a baby boomer.
She's a boomer. Go on. Yes.
Come on, boomer.
Okay.
In
boomer.
A good way. Though. In a good way. All boomers should look as amazing as you do, Alicia.
Okay. All right. Sorry. Go on.
I asked one of the women doing the training. I said the webinar. I said, you know, it seems to me that millennials are better equipped or more willing to mm-hmm. talk about mm-hmm. it.
Yes.
To talk about mortality and mm-hmm. dying than.
Well, and their
many
emotions in general.
And many Gen X.
Mm-hmm.
And emotions in general, certainly. And I said, you know, do you have an idea as to why that might be? And quick as that, she said, we lived through 9/11 as little kids.
Oh, see? Oh. They've been through some stuff.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
And death becomes them.
Mm-hmm.
That's
mm-hmm.
a movie.
That's.
That's a movie.
That's really interesting.
And now you have you have that, and then you have the pandemic, mm-hmm. and then you have that exposure, and it desensitizes them to a sense that they're dying. They could stand in the room and be there, but be there.
Right, right. And so I think
Now I'm really thinking about school shootings.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
Well, now I'm going to. All right. So we have a few minutes left. So I want to ask. I want to make sure we have two more questions in the few minutes we have left with Holly and make sure she's able to share anything that she wanted. So one of the two questions, the biggest misconception about death doulas, or you could flip it, what you wish more people understood.
Mm. I think the biggest misconception is that we are the angel of death and we are going to come in and it's going to happen the minute I walk in the door, right?
Hello, I'm here with my morphine and my
exactly my scythe.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the thing I wish people knew simply is that we exist, that there are people who are trained and educated to support you specifically when dealing with these really major, scary illnesses that may lead to the end of your life, and you and the people in your life, your circle of care, do not have to try to fumble your way through it alone.
Yes.
And one of the advantages of being a death doula kind of independently is that I can support people from a horrible diagnosis all the way until their death. I can perform their funeral. I can provide grief counseling for their family if they want. And because I'm not in an institution with very kind of regimented.
Sure.
You know.
And the hospice benefit where it's like, which is wonderful, 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 but it's like, okay, it ends at the year mark and after.
Right.
So in terms of then, that leads into my second question, which is your hope is that more people knew you exist and that the field exists. So for listeners who are curious but unsure, what would you say to someone who is thinking about reaching out to a death doula, either for themselves or for a loved one? Where do they start?
I will offer first that many, many, if not most, doulas will offer at least half an hour, sometimes a full hour, free initial consultation. So that is always possible. I certainly do that. Secondly, that if you only have an initial conversation and you feel like, oh, maybe this isn't for me, that's fine. But I also encourage folks to talk to more than one doula if possible. Because so much, if I'm imagining somebody is going to accompany me to the end of my life, I better feel damn close to them.
Yes.
I better feel really connected.
Energy feeling connected.
Yes.
And we didn't get a chance, but we do have another minute or two, because doulas, not all doulas come from chaplaincy. They
certainly
can come.
Not.
So, right? What do you normally see in terms of where people are coming from in terms of their own training or background?
It varies immensely. And because we are not at this point regulated on a national level, somebody could have a personal experience plus an 8-month long training course, and they set up their shingle as a doula. Or it could be somebody who was a nurse for 30
That's
years.
That's what I've seen. I've seen nurses and I've seen social workers.
Very often it is people who have been working in healthcare in chaplain roles, social work, nursing roles, who say, I want to do a lot of the same kind of work, but under my own power, as it were.
If people wanted to reach out to you, how would they find it? You have a website.
I have a website.
Please share it.
HeartwoodDeathDoula.com, or they are welcome to call or text me. Let's see if I can remember my number. I think I've got it memorized now. 919-576-9243.
Okay, and it's HeartwoodDeathDoula.com.
Yep.
HEARTWOOD.
Can you repeat that number?
919-576-9243.
So any now we're at our last minute, we'll say it. I always like to end with what gives you hope for the future, and or maybe you could say how you ask your clients. Do you call them your clients? How do they find hope in the midst of it?
I love that. I personally find hope in seeing how many more people are beginning to recognize that by talking about and accepting and embracing our mortality, we can more fully live our lives. That is my joy and my hope. And I see my clients find hope when they are very far along in the illness trek, I see them find hope in small, beautiful ways. Mm-hmm. In, oh, my grandson brought me a milkshake. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, my best friend brought me the most gorgeous flower, right? That mm-hmm. is something that severe illness does for us, is makes us appreciate mm-hmm. those small moments of beauty in each day.
These small sacred moments,
amen.
I would say.
Yes.
Holly Ann Luck Sullivan, thank you so much for coming on the Aging Well Together show. I'm going to be thinking and marinating and sharing this information with others. Alicia, thank you for being back here. WCOM, thank you for letting us use the studio and for fixing our issues. To Orange County Department on Aging, thank you for supporting our show, and clearly for listeners, we really, really appreciate it. And in our few seconds left, I think we have, I just want to wish everyone peace and calm. I know mm-hmm. it is an intense time right now. I think a lot of people are going through things, and so be kind to each other. Listen mm-hmm. to Afternoon Talk with Alicia. That's about to start.
To be kind.
And with that, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Oh, there's some music.
set ourselves up. See, retirement is the long game. We got to make moves and make them early. Set up goals. Don't worry about a setback. Just save up and stack up to reach them. Let's put ourselves in the right position. Pre-game to greater things.
Start building your retirement plan at thisispretirement.org. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
You're listening to WCOM LP Chapel Hill Carborough 103.5 FM on your listening dial.